Welcome to the Corlin Economics Report, a weekly look at financial and political topics relating to asset-based investing. Guests on this program pay no fees to appear, and guests and hosts disclose any equity interest in companies profiled. Now, the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey everyone, welcome in to the weekend edition of the KE Report, a special Christmas weekend edition as this is going live on the radio stations December 25th. I hope everybody tuning in today, tomorrow, really whenever you have a chance to listen in. I hope you all had a very Merry Christmas, a very happy holiday season, whatever you might celebrate this time of the year. Corey Fleck here, along with Shad Markowitz. We are your hosts for this weekend show. We're going to be kicking off the show with Jesse Felder, founder and editor of the Felder Report. We're going to be starting off with some more broad market commentary, diving into some other sectors that Jesse is noting as we head into next year, because right now it's all about looking into next year, which is a complete guessing game. What's going to happen for a wide range of question marks, but fact of the matter is it helps to look back on this year and then project into next year. Jesse, let's start off with the stock market. Heading into 2022, look, this last year, pretty darn good for the U.S. equity markets. It seemed like anytime there was any sort of a sell-off, it was bought back very quickly. And hey, look, if you were just simple buy and holder this whole year, you've done pretty darn well in those U.S. markets. Throughout the year, we did note a lot of maybe underlying weakness in terms of weak breadth and some other indicators that said, look, maybe a market correction is coming. Fact of the matter is, didn't really come at all this year, at least so far this year, but we only have another week of trading left. What's your outlook for 2022, Jesse? Is it going to be a bit more of the same?
Well, I think you make a terrific point, Corey, about a lot going on under the surface, even while passive investors in the major indexes don't really notice it. To me, that gives them a really false sense of security right now. I think if you polled the average passive investor, they would have no idea that the average NASDAQ stock is down 40% from its high. That's amazing to me that we have stocks, very near all-time highs, and the average NASDAQ stock is down 40% already. To me, it's one of the things I've been paying very close attention to is breadth, because risk appetites are probably the most important thing any macro investor in the stock market can pay attention to right now, because stocks go up when people are risk on, they go off. They go down when people go risk off. And to me, we're seeing a big risk off sign lately with a lot of these most popular stocks in the market really tanking. And I did an interesting interview with Jim Stack over the summer where he talked about these meme stocks can be a really important canary in the coal mine of the broad stock market in terms of this risk taking, that as long as they're doing okay, that overall risk appetite is okay, and investors are still kind of in a risk on mindset. But as soon as investors start shunning risk, and you'll see it first in these highest beta names in these meme stocks, as soon as these things start rolling over, that is a big warning sign for risk appetites in a broad sense. And that's exactly what we're seeing. We're seeing a lot of these things just get absolutely annihilated. Stocks that are down 60, 70, 80% in a short period of time that were speculative favorites, very, very recently. So to me, I think what's going on with the stock market right now is we have a lot of this shift under the surface that's showing up in breadth indicators. It's in the midst of a broader context too, where I do believe I've written over the last few months that we're probably going to see an earnings recession next year. So to just look at the fundamentals, right? Valuations on the equity market are the highest they've ever been. We're more overvalued than we were at the peak in 2000 and even at the 1929 stock market peak. And at the same time, those fundamentals are poised to roll over. It's not just the broad stock market, it's the biggest stocks in the market too. But when you look back at periods where you've had rising interest rates, rising oil prices, and a strong dollar, that usually precedes an earnings decline. And that's exactly what we've seen over the past 12 to 18 months. And so very likely we're going to see an earnings recession next year. But as I mentioned, the FANG stocks too, Facebook, Apple, Amazon, Microsoft, Google are the five that I'm referring to, are now today trading at their highest aggregate price to sales ratio in their collective history. They together trade about 7 times sales. If you put all their sales together, total market cap together, you know, in the past they've traded, you know, 4.5 times sales, but they've had a huge surge in revenue growth through the pandemic, and that's led to not only their fundamentals going up, but the valuation on those going up to a record high. But next year, even for these stocks, it's amazing to see their revenue growth. Their aggregate revenue growth hit a peak of 40% in late 2020, early 21, which is astounding off such a massive base. And that's why investors have just loved these stocks and poured money into the ETFs, the QQQs and SPYs. But revenue growth as a group is supposed to fall below 10% next year. And actually for Apple, it's going to turn negative, the biggest company in the group. So it's hard for me to see the valuations of these things staying this elevated, even as their fundamentals deteriorate so rapidly. And there's one other indicator I'd point to. I call this my economic predictors index, which kind of validates these ideas about slowing and falling revenue and earnings. And it's basically, this is just made up of the most sensitive, economically sensitive sectors in the market, their relative performance, things like retail, materials, industrials. And when these things are leading, that's a really good indicator for the economy and for the stock market. But their relative performance peaked back in May, June, and they've been making lower lows ever since relative to the market. So that to me is a very clear warning sign that the economy and fundamentals, earnings, and things are probably going to disappoint in the quarters ahead.
Well, Jesse, you've laid out a number of key threads that all tie together there, from the market breadth. And we had mentioned in our last interview some of the Hindenburg warnings, like 13 or 14 this year. You've talked about the FANG stocks and their overvaluation, the meme stocks and like the kind of the retail craze into that speculative fervor. But you also had a couple interesting pieces out recently, one titled When the Smart Money Says Sold to You, talking about all the corporate executives and insiders selling at a record pace. At the same time, you also put out a recent article, The Small Business Message for the Markets, about how small businesses are seeing all that inflation show up in their businesses. So just weave this all together. And what do you think the macro trend is going to be for next year in 2022 then?
Well, I'm glad you brought that post up, Chad, because small businesses right now are saying that their profits are going to suffer next year. They're saying, you know, basically due to rising costs, rising inflation, rising wage pressures, that we're probably going to see profit margins for the entire corporate sector come under pressure next year. So that's another validating signal. But also there's another piece that I wrote about insider selling, and we've seen over $69 billion of corporate insider sales this year, which is by far and away a record. And when you put that, I like to try and normalize that by putting together the sell to buy ratio. And the sell to buy ratio was, you know, at the bottom of the COVID crash in March of 2020, it went under 10, which is a very low rating. You had only 10 times sales to buys. And that is usually kind of signal you see at major bottoms. We saw that again in early 2016 at that major low for the stock market. But since then, we've seen insider selling just ramp up massively in the last 18 to 20 months. And that ratio went over 30, which is the highest I've ever seen. And that's essentially insiders are selling not just record dollar amounts, but they're selling in record amounts relative to the insiders that are buying. Now, Najat Sehun, who's a University of Michigan business school professor, has done just extensive research on this and found that when the insider sell to buy ratio is very, very high, or not just when it's high, but this ratio has a very strong negative correlation with forward returns in the stock market and the future economic performance. So when insider selling is huge, stock market returns are poor, relatively poor, and so is economic activity. So the fact that insiders are selling is also an important signal that stock market performance could be weak next year, earnings could be weak, and the economy could disappoint in a number of ways too. But this absolutely stands in stark contrast to what retail investors are doing. And we talked about fundamentals, but this is kind of more in terms of just investor sentiment. We've seen so much money pour into the equity market this year. I think it's more money came into the stock market, into passive vehicles and things this year, than we saw in the 19 years prior combined. So there's been just massive influx. Not just that, we've seen margin debt soar to over $900 billion, the highest it's ever been, over 4% of GDP, higher than that's ever been. And every time we've seen margin debt scream at like accelerate at more than 50% year over year like it did, it's marked a major peak in the stock market. We saw it over the past year. We've seen it. We saw it in 2007, right before the financial crisis. We saw it in early 2000, right before the dot-com bust. And we saw it in 1972, 73, right before that 73, 74 bear market kicked in. So these extremes in retail sentiment are also usually a good predictor, a good signal that we're witnessing a speculative mania. And as I mentioned before, seeing a lot of these high beta names just go into free fall, just start crashing, is a signal that that speculative mania is potentially in the early stages of reversing from boom to bust. Another indicator that I look at in this regard is I created what I call my stonks index. And it's basically just 10 of the most popular stocks, meme stocks, of the past year and a half. And that thing is down literally 35% already from its November high. That to me is a very clear risk off signal that, ties into a lot of these other things that we've talked about, with breadth warnings, I think we talked about last time I was on these Hindenburg omens, but the reason we're seeing the Hindenburg omens and so many stocks at 52-week lows is because of this risk-off trade, this implosion in a lot of these meme stocks. And we hit almost, I think it was 18 Hindenburg omens on the NASDAQ over the last 12 months. This is another indicator. Every time it's hit 18 Hindenburg omens in a 12-month period, it's represented a major, I don't want to say a major stock market peak, but the last time we saw this was in summer of 2018. Before that fourth quarter 2018 sell-off, which was very steep and painful and forced Jay Powell to flip from being, hawkish and raising rates to complete flip-flop at Christmas 2018. We saw it in 2015 before significant volatility in the summer of 2015 and early 2016. And before that, we saw it in 2007, right before the financial crisis. So these types of breadth warnings that we're seeing usually lead to significant volatility, major corrections, if not bear markets.
Jesse, I feel like when we talk about big picture U.S. markets, we always have to talk about the high flying stocks, the ones that, in all fairness, make up a large part of some of these markets, the high flying tech. What do you see in terms of their potential moving into next year, because these stocks have continued to perform pretty well?
Well, I think, there's two different things to discuss here, right? There's the high-flying tech that are kind of more in the small-cap sector or mid-cap sector, and these are the ones that are getting absolutely annihilated right now. It's only the mega-cap tech that's held up relatively well over the past couple of months. And as I mentioned before, these stocks are going to see revenue growth. It's hard to use the term collapse because when you see revenues grow from 40% year over year to down to less than 10, we're going to see maybe 7-8% revenue growth for these stocks. That is a significant shift. And it's going to have to be reflected in valuations. And so I think while mega cap tech has held up relatively well, it probably is not going to be able to maintain that over the next couple of quarters. I mean, we're seeing a lot of these companies, Apple said, iPhone sales could disappoint and they're having difficulties. And it's amazing to me that stock still trades at record valuations. But the final thing we haven't really discussed is the macro side of this too. What's really driven a lot of these flows into the stock market is the money printing from the Fed that has supported fiscal policy that's put money directly into people's pockets. That money has flowed directly into the stock market. You can look at excess liquidity and stocks really move hand in hand. Excess liquidity, leads the stock market by about a year. And I in terms of excess liquidity, it's basically just the change in M2 less the change in GDP. So when M2 is growing faster than GDP, you have a great deal of excess liquidity. That pushes stock prices higher. When M2 grows slower than the economy, that's a negative or a reduction of liquidity, and that's not good for stocks. And we've already seen M2 growth fall below GDP growth in the last several quarters, which is already a reduction in excess liquidity, which should be bearish for the stock market over the next several quarters. But you pair that with the Federal Reserve, who's now under a great deal of pressure to not just taper quicker, but start raising interest rates. You're hearing a lot of Fed heads say, you know, March, the March meeting is a live meeting for rate hikes. And so, you know, when you have the macro, the sentiment, technical, you know, warning signs of breath like this paired with the Federal Reserve and the macro side of these things really starting to turn bearish, to me, it's just puts together an overall sign of, you know, it is time to keep your eyes open and be very concerned about, you know, just the overall direction, the trend in the stock market right now.
Well, Jesse, it sounds like after a year where really growth and those tech stocks being a big part of that and the Cathie Woods, ARK Innovations and all of that interest, Tesla, high flying, that maybe you're seeing more of a shift out of growth moving into next year and back into value from a macro theme. Is that the way you're looking at it?
Well, it's really reminiscent to me of the 2000 stock market top when for those last few years, whatever it was, 96, 97, 98, 99, value stocks just started going down and then went, you know, it kind of accelerated to the downside as a lot of the most popular dot-com stocks just accelerated to the upside into the March of 2000 peak. And then when the NASDAQ bubble really peaked in it was March 9th of 2000 or somewhere around that time frame, the bottom for value stocks was formed. And as soon as NASDAQ stocks started rolling over, there were stocks that were so cheap, they just, I mean, doubled and tripled in a matter of months. And that was a real important shift where investors realized, okay, this game, the greater fool game with NASDAQ is over. And I think the smart money, you know, began to shift into value. Right now, to today, it's astounding to me to see value, just generally, the relative PE of value, the price-to-earnings ratio relative to growth, has never been cheaper. In other words, you know, value stocks are cheaper relative to growth than they've ever been. Now, that says a lot about the overvaluation of growth stocks. It might say more about the overvaluation of growth and the undervaluation of value. But when you look at, you know, what is it in the value category, you know, it's amazing to me to see it's really just made up of the best inflation protection the stock market has to offer. It's material stocks, it's mining stocks, it's energy stocks. And energy, to me, is the most compelling right now. And a lot of this is just, you know, due to ESG mandates where investors have said, you know what, I don't want to own fossil fuels. And so just from a systematic standpoint, we're not going to own these things, no matter how cheap they get, no matter how attractive they are. And so I think there is a terrific opportunity today for investors to focus on these areas because today the consensus is, and Jay Powell has said, inflation's not transitory. We really need to start addressing this. And there's a ton of political pressure for them to do so. But investors haven't gotten the message. Investors are still positioned as if they're betting, you know, everything. They're all in on the transitory trade that we're going to own growth stocks. And we're going to be crowded into these things that really are hurt most by rising inflation. And we're going to avoid all the stocks in the market that offer the best inflation protection out there. And so I do think if this next year we see kind of an epiphany on the part of investors where they realize, wait a second, inflation is not going away. The Fed is still so far behind the curve that they're not doing anything to really address inflation at this point. Then, you know, when they're forced to continue to tighten and things, you know, a lot of these expensive growth stocks are going to continue to implode, or it's going to reach the big boys who have been kind of insulated until now. And then the stocks that, you know, that are incredibly cheap today and offer terrific inflation protection, and they're so illiquid too. I mean, they're going to have to go up 2, 3, 4 fold if investors do decide to transition from growth to value.
So Jesse, let's talk a little bit more about the commodity sector, starting with energy, because energy was a standout sector when it came to commodities this year with just how much the oil price ran. It pulled back a little bit at the end of the year, but it really exceeded a lot of investor estimates. And to that point, regarding the stocks broadly lagged, I would say, as well. Do you still see that opportunity then into next year for energy?
Yeah, you know, it's fascinating. Energy was one of the best performing sectors of the year this year. But when you look at valuations, you know, growth stocks saw their valuations actually go up. And the energy sector saw its valuation go down dramatically, even though it was one of the most, best performing sectors. And that's just a function of the stock prices didn't improve as fast as fundamentals. But we talked about insider selling before. I pay very close attention to executive insider trading. And energy is one of the only sectors where I'm seeing persistent insider buying. I'll just mention two stocks in particular that I've written about for my subscribers. One is Continental Resources, which I first started writing about in late 2020 when Harold Hamm, bought about $100 million. He's founder and CEO of the company, bought about $100 million worth of stock and said, I'm going to continue buying with my own money until I think the stock's not cheap anymore. Over the last three months, he bought another $30 million worth of stock. So obviously he thinks Continental is still dramatically undervalued and the oil price is probably going much higher. And I thought that was pretty stunning until I saw Kelsey Warren at Energy Transfer buy $112 or $120 million worth of ET over in a single day. This is a midstream company. It's astounding to me. When I remember, I've studied Warren Buffett for a long time, and he said several times, the ideal business to own is a toll booth because, right, people are going to have to come and drive across your bridge or whatever it is and pay you whatever it is you ask to get to the other side. And Energy Transfer essentially runs an energy toll booth. We have pipelines and terminals, and you want to get your energy from one area to the other, you got to pay us. And they, has a 7-8% dividend, something like that, on the stock. Which in a world of a 1.5% 10-year treasury is, astounding to me such a solid, business would have such a, pay such a premium to, the risk-free rate. So, that clearly that's what Kelsey Warren sees when he's pulling the trigger and buying that much stock. And so Matador is another one where I've seen a ton of insider buying. I don't own any of that one. The energy sector across the board has tons of insider buying, which is very, very bullish confirmation of the thesis that the sector is just too cheap still.
Well, Jesse, just along the same theme with the energy and the inflation protection and going into value possibly next year, what's your outlook on the precious metals? Are you still bullish on those, or do you see there being some investor interest in those when the tide turns next year?
I'm getting really excited about gold. I know I have been for the past few months. I think we've talked in August after that kind of flash crash in the gold price came back and kind of tested those lows again in September. What I think so many people have gotten so discouraged with gold. And I understand that it's not necessarily a performance of gold, but relatively speaking to almost every other asset class out there, it's been a major disappointment for over a year now. But really, since the March low, gold has been making higher lows consistently. And at the same time, investor sentiment has been getting more and more negative, more and more despondent, which, is incredibly bullish to me. We saw, I think from just a purely technical standpoint, too, we saw gold break out in November and then give it back pretty quickly, which everyone looks at as a false breakout and very disappointing. But if you study the methods of my friend Michael Oliver, who I think has a uniquely valuable way of looking at these things, you look at the weekly chart, yes, on price alone, that's a false breakout. But when you look at a momentum chart, and I'm just looking at, basically price relative to the 40-week moving average, kind of the same as a 200-day moving average, to me, that same false breakout is actually a successful breakout and then a falling back to test that breakout level, just literally a textbook bullish pattern. So for when I isolate momentum and look at it, all this negativity surrounding what gold's done over the past couple of months is actually very, very bullish. and says to me that we're probably going to see gold make a sustainable breakout above this downtrend line, you know, in a matter of days, months at most.
Jesse, what matters the most for gold heading into next year then? Because we heard so much about inflation being a driver for gold. We saw higher inflation this year, gold flat. And we saw low interest rates continuing. Gold still flat this year. Sentiment has gone against gold. So I guess that is positive. The gold hasn't dropped even further and is still right around that 1800 level. Do we need a market correction? Do we need the Fed to backtrack on rate hikes? What in your eyes will be a key driver for gold in 2022?
Yeah, I really think it's two things that, you know, it's funny that people say gold has performed so poorly relative to all these high beta things. Of course it has. You know, gold is seen as a safe haven, and the attitude in markets over the last year and a half, 2 years has been, who needs a safe haven, right? When I can own, you know, Dogecoin and I can own, you know, GameStop, and it all just goes up and, you know, stocks only go up. Why do I need a safe haven? So yes, a period of risk off would be very bullish, you know, kind of rekindling the idea in people's minds that yes, you do need to have an allocation to a safe haven. But I think also, you know, we've seen the dollar very strong this year, especially over the last few months. I've been honestly surprised gold has performed so well given the strength of the dollar. If you look at it relatively speaking, gold probably should have broken down and made lower lows as the dollar's made higher highs. It hasn't. To me, that's a very bullish sign. But I do think there's been a lot of trepidation in the face of the shift in the Fed, this Powell pivot from essentially the most dovish monetary policy, you know, in generations, maybe in history, to something less dovish where, you know, we're going to taper down to zero. We're going to start rate hikes. But look at the last couple of rate hike cycles. It's been very bullish for gold prices, right? People freak out in anticipation of rate hikes, just like they did, you know, leading into 2015, 16. You know, Jay Powell came into office and said, we're going to hike rates and do all this stuff. As soon as he started hiking, gold price bottomed and started going up. Same thing, you know, during the, 2003, 4, 5, 6, 7, you know, Greenspan was hiking rates and gold prices went up strongly. So I think there's a lot of trepidation leading into a rate hike cycle. But then as soon as it begins, you get a kind of buy the news following the sell the rumor. So everyone wants to sell gold and the rumor that the Fed's going to turn hawkish. But as soon as you start seeing, well, how hawkish are they really going to be? People start going, okay, well, they're not going to, you know, they're maybe going to raise three times next year. We're going to get to 75 basis points on Fed funds, maybe 100 basis points on Fed funds. Real rates are still negative by 500 basis points. They're not going to raise rates at 100 basis point increments and get up to 3-5% next year. So I think right now the markets are pricing in 3-4 rate hikes, maybe starting in March and a tapering to zero. If that happens, you know, gold might do okay, actually might start rising. If Jay Powell disappoints on that framework, that's priced in, and it ends up they don't hike three times next year, or they're not able to taper all the way to zero, and they have to restart QE in some form, gold is going to absolutely explode to the upside. So I think right now gold is priced in all the potential bad news that we could see over the next few months, and has priced in none of the potential good news. I think what's going on right now, the Fed has to raise rates to a degree where they create a stumble in the stock market. I think that's what they realize right now. In order to tamp down inflation and appease all these people upset and worried about inflation, we have to do enough to create a stumble in the stock market. That risk off would be bullish for gold prices. But also that risk off period in the stock market might be enough for Powell to say, okay, maybe we've done enough right now. Maybe just tapering to zero and one or two hikes is enough, and we don't need to follow through on the rest. At that point, you know, gold is really going to take off. So I think there's a lot of things lining up in gold's favor in addition to the technical kind of momentum setup that I mentioned before.
All right, Jesse, it's always great hearing from you. I love reading over all of your work, and I really appreciate all of the time you have spent with us this year. Again, Jesse is the founder and editor of the Felder Report, which I will post a link to within that weekend show posting. Jesse, thank you for taking time with us on this Christmas Day weekend edition. I hope you have a very Merry Christmas, very Happy Holidays, a Happy New Year, and I will be very excited to chat with you in 2022. Thanks for your time, Jesse.
Yeah, thanks, Corey, and Merry Christmas to you and to all your listeners. I think, hopefully, here's to a very prosperous new year for all of us commodities-focused investors.
Al Corlin's firm, A.B. Corlin & Associates Incorporated, provides consulting services to public companies on matters of regulatory compliance. To find out more, follow the link from www.kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back after this brief timeout.